Chapter 38. It's late afternoon when I walk into Chimakwa with my large duffel bag of hockey gear slung over my good shoulder. Once I enter the woman's locker room, the oddly intoxicating aroma brings back the thrill of every great play I've ever made. The whiff of industrial cleaning products mixed with the skunky stink of sweat smells powerful. Happy birthday to me, I whisper before practically skipping to my old locker. One glance at Robin's locker next to mine wipes the smile off my face. I figured today would be a mixture of highs and lows, playing hockey one more time, but for the worst possible reason. My phone buzzes while I'm changing into my gear. Auntie, not sure I can watch you play. I get why, but it is still foolish. I swallow the lump in my throat. Auntie has never missed a home game of mine. You still remember how to play? Been a while. Macy laces up her black hockey skates, which are adorned with acrylic-painted flowers. Yep, starters have good memories, I shoot back. Just a little reminder about which one of us started the game on the ice and which one watched it from the bench. Once we are ready, Macy and I leave the locker room together. The bleachers are already filling up with people who want to watch our warm-up. We step onto the ice side by side and automatically cross our sticks for all the Kwezunwug who feel alive the moment their hockey skates touch the ice. When it's game time, my body feels the delicious tingle of battle. My stomach clenches, my legs are jittery, and I feel like puking. Classic adrenaline rush. On the ice, it is music to my ears, feast to my hunger. Coach Bobby puts me in as left defenseman, and it's like my second skin. I breathe it, I transform, and everything that is not a tenacious beast falls away. I join center ice, waiting for the referee to drop the puck for Levi and my teammate to fight over. Levi will aim the puck to Stormy on my right side. Sometimes they operate as a single-cell entity, as if Levi's brain controls two sets of arms and legs. Levi as host, and Stormy doing his bidding without independent thought. Just when I think my body will explode from adrenaline overload, the ref releases the puck and something magical yet familiar happens. Time slows for an instant, enough for a quiet calm to wash over me. I watch the puck drop, as if in slow motion, not even touching the ice before Levi's superhuman reflexes have responded and his stick smacks it to Stormy. I intercept and pass it to Quinton, my high school teammate, who rushes to the soup's net. Time now races and I am the Terminator. With laser focus, I instantly compute actions into strategic counter moves and proactive aggressions to force opponents into changing course. My team quickly finds its rhythm, defending the puck and setting up plays. We know Quinton will be halfway to the net, ready for the pass. We won the state championship my junior year and made it to the quarterfinals last spring. We are fluent in playing as a cohesive unit. The Supes, individually, are better players, but they haven't gelled as a team yet. Or as my brother would say, they aren't reading each other. Levi loses his temper, swearing at a teammate for not sharing the same hive mind as Stormy and Mike. Although both are rookie Supes, they've been on the ice with Levi for 10 years. In the final period, I take a hip check from Stormy and keep going. That goon ain't getting in my way. I back check and steal the puck. Macy, who subbed in a few minutes ago, is waiting on the periphery. We've danced this number before. Stormy bounds back for another go at me, but I pass behind my back to Macy, who chips it to Quinton. She races to the net, where, 3 seconds later, she gets it back and fires the puck. Mike's arms seem elastic, stretching to reach the upper corner of the net to block Macy's shot. Damn, she nearly had it in. Stormy crashes into me. I'm thrown into the plexiglass and boards, bouncing off and landing in a heap on my shoulder. I gasp at the pain. Nadonis, Bozzy Gongeson. I quickly get up and roll my left shoulder to assess the pain. It stabs. No, no, no. Maybe I just need to shake out a kinked nerve. Coach Bobby pulls me out. My sub and I fist bump with our right hands as we cross paths. I sit on the bench, moving my left shoulder in circles. It hurts like hell. A minute later, Macy subs out and sits next to me. Stormy got you good, she says. Eh, I reply, as pain radiates from my bad shoulder. Keeping my eyes on the puck, I fight the temptation to look anywhere else. If Auntie is here watching, I am absolutely certain she is glaring at me from wherever she is seated. I bounce my legs, dreading the inevitable confrontation. Your guy is pretty smooth, Macy says. It takes a few blinks to realize she means Jamie. Eh? Truthfully, I haven't paid him any notice. She laughs. Holy, you're a supportive boo. Screw him. He ain't on my team, I say. All's fair in love and hockey. Off ice, he's mine. On ice, he's theirs. I point my lips toward Levi. The part about Jamie not being on my team, I don't think it's true anymore. Can you trust me? His voice echoes. I watch as the guy who replaces me does a crappy job on defense. Crappy sub was a year ahead of Robin, so he has never played with Levi. My brother sees every opportunity and weakness. The only way to beat Levi is to stay at his side and strategize your best counter move if he ever lets down his guard. If I figured out crappy sub in 2 minutes, then Levi has as well. Put me in, I shout to Coach Bobby, standing so I can jump over the boards. Sit down and shut up, Fontaine, he yells back. I grumble and stew in the burning pain. Macy laughs. You only got one good arm. What are you gonna do? She imitates a penguin, keeping her arms pressed to her sides and flapping her hand next to me. Crappy sub leaves an opening for Levi to skate through, receive a pass from Jamie, and take a shot. The blast of the soup's goal horn, from an actual freighter, confirms my brother's aim. I would have skated into Levi, drawn a penalty, and made a sacrifice for the greater good, I shout over the deafening noise to Macy. We lose, but just barely. Although my team played better, we couldn't get anything past Mike. One look at my brother during the post-game handshake line, and it's clear. He is pissed. Levi knows we handed the soups their sloppy asses. Jamie's face lights up when we meet in the handshake line. My stomach somersaults at his touch. Do you trust me? In the locker room, I check to make sure Auntie isn't waiting to give me hell. Once I know the coast is clear, I text my doctor. Then I peel off my jersey sideways and wince in pain. You want me to get coach? Macy offers while helping me out of my gear. Nah, I just texted Dr. B to meet me at War Mem after I shower. Yeah, good thinking on that shower. You're really ripe. She scrunches her nose as if we are trapped in a Sugar Island outhouse in July. Bitch, I say without any heat behind it. I walk toward the showers. Bigger, bitch, she replies, following me. The bigger, the better. I turn on the water and wash with one hand, keeping my left arm glued to my side. If you say so, Macy laughs. Petty bitch, always trying to get the last word in. I know so, I throw back at her, letting our smack talk distract me from the pain. I towel off gingerly and get dressed. As I attempt to zip my jeans, she huffs a tortured sigh and helps me. When we reach the lobby, the packed crowd cheers. The roar feels familiar, like a real high school game. I'd forgotten how great this moment is. All the community love. Hockey brings my community together. Native and non-native, all ages, all neighborhoods. Here in Chemukwa, a community recreation building funded by the Sugar Island Ojibwe tribe, everyone stands united for our teams. I just hope they remember today was for Robin Bailey. With my duffel bag slung over my unhurt shoulder and my jacket over the bag like a saddle blanket, I push through the crowd. Jamie stands a few feet behind the other guys. When I touch his arm, he stares at me in astonishment. What? I check to see if I put my sweatshirt on backward. I figured you were a decent player. Jamie's hushed voice reaches me through the surrounding chaos. But Tanis, you're incredible. I don't know what to do with his admiration. I shrug my shoulders, wincing in pain. He takes my duffel bag before I can protest. You okay? I took a hit, I say, faking nonchalance. There she is, Mike interrupts. Donnie defense. We kicked your asses, Stormy declares. That's not what I saw. I ignore Stormy's glare. It's all good, Levi says, bumping into Jamie robustly enough to dislodge my gear bag. The point was to start playing better as a team. The point was to do something for Robin. I scowl at my brother, who helps Jamie with my bag. How could this be just another game? Levi took Robin to Shagala her junior year. No guy should have that kind of power over you, no matter who he is or how much everyone adores him, or how much you might still want him. Robin's words ring in my ears. Did she mean Levi? He does have a reputation for loving and leaving. Or as the guys say, snag and brag. What's with the stink eye? Levi asks me. You mess up your shoulder when Stormy body checked ya? He tells Jamie. She's got a bum shoulder, always popping its socket. Really? How long has it been an issue? Jamie asks Levi while looking at me. Mike's parents join us. I avoid eye contact with Call Me Grant. I haven't been near him since the bus ride back from Green Bay. Happy birthday, Donis, Mrs. Edwards says. How did it feel to play for the Blue Devils one more time? Great, I say. It feels good to let my true feelings show. Tonight, Secret Squirrel is taking a break. One hell of a birthday, Call Me Grant says. Hockey and becoming a tribal member. I gape as he puts his finger to his lips like he did from the doorway of his hotel room. Shh, your secret is safe with me, Donis Fontaine. He continues. You didn't know? Tribal Council met today instead of next Monday, because Chief Manitou and a few other council members are traveling to Washington, D.C. that day. Woohoo! Levi shouts, reaching to hug me and spin me around. I keep both arms glued to my sides, mimicking Macy's penguin impersonation from earlier. It feels like I'm in a centrifuge. When he stops, I'm nauseous, only partly from the spin. The other reason is Call Me Grant being so interested in Tribal Council business. My heart lifts when the twins shout for me from across the lobby. They sit on Auntie's and Art's shoulders. Pauline chews on a section of her ponytail. Mom is with them as well. I check Auntie's face for any indication that she is upset with me, but all I see is a big smile. I wave back with my good arm and head over. Jamie remains at my side. Please don't say anything about my shoulder, I tell him before we reach my family. I hold hands with Jamie, keeping him close to my left side so I won't need to move it. The twins, now hopping around, get side hugs from me with my right arm. Mom kisses me and whispers how proud she is of me. Happy birthday to our newest tribal member. Auntie's voice cracks as she leans in to hug me. I hide my wince and pretend that Call Me Grant didn't hijack this special moment. Oh, Auntie, this means so much. Miigwech for helping me. Mom wipes away her happy tears. I know she always wanted this for me. Jamie wants to take me out to dinner to celebrate, I announce. Have to spoil the birthday girl a little, he says. Mom gives Jamie a huge hug, and I can tell she means it. Jamie laughs at Art's jokes and nods when my aunt tells him something I can't hear. The twins want to do a simultaneous high-five clap with him. Jamie encourages them with each attempt to sink their leaps in the air to reach his raised palms. He laughs when the girls intentionally smack each other and again when they finally perfect it. Our eyes meet, His are sparkling with pure joy as an incandescent smile tugs at his scar. It feels like we are in the zone together, where we are here with everyone else, but also somewhere else that is entirely ours. In that place, James Brian Johnson is 18 years old and hoping to get scouted by U of M or Michigan Tech. Any school with an excellent pre-med program for me. We make plans to stay in the dorms for our first year and move off campus after that. His hockey schedule works well because I need to come home often to check on Mom. Waking up tangled in each other's arms is the best start to our day. He joins me in offering Sema each morning, giving thanks because every day feels like a gift. It is a beautiful dream. You are fluent in a language when you dream in it. I assumed Sini meant nighttime dreams. I didn't think about the ones that sneak up on you during the day. A tear falls down my cheek without warning. He isn't 18. He's 22. He has a different name, a past, a life beyond this assignment. I try to imagine a place for us to be together in the after of the investigation. But that dream, the one based in reality, is too murky and too far away to see. We walk to my Jeep. He loads my duffel bag into the back. "Where would you like to go to dinner?" he asks. With my good arm, I reach to touch his damp curls. My fingertips trace his scar and settle on his carotid artery. Each pulse is an affirmation that he is a real person, here with me in the now of the newer new normal. I kiss the pulse on his neck. Each heartbeat throbs against my lips. I inhale deeply, holding it in as if it might stay with me. His familiar soap and natural scent fill my lungs. "Can you trust me?" "Jamie, would you drive me to the emergency room?" The nurse tells me to change into a gown and that Dr. Bonacera will be right in. She instructs Jamie to tie my gown in the back and to leave my hurt shoulder free. As soon as the door closes, I turn my back to him and try wriggling out of my oversized sweatshirt, retracting my unhurt arm through the sleeve. Jamie lifts the sweatshirt over my head. He moves my hair over my right shoulder, exposing my bare back. I didn't bother with a bra after the shower. I would have had to ask Macy for help, and it was easier to freestyle. He kisses my hurt shoulder with lips soft as a whisper. From behind, he holds the gown in front of me, arms over my shoulders, and I put my uninjured arm through the armhole. He drapes it carefully over my hurt shoulder and ties it loosely in the back. "You smell like strawberries," he says simply, sniffing next to my head. There's a knock on the door a second before Dr. B enters. At the sight of Jamie, my doctor greets him. They shake hands. Jamie introduces himself as my boyfriend. I tell Jamie that Dr. Bonacera's wife is the head nurse at Evercare. "Okay, Donis, let's see what's going on here," Dr. B says in a soothing tone. I steel myself as he touches my shoulder. It's painful, but I've known worse. "It's not dislocated," he says to my relief, "but you did bang it good." "So no sling, just be gentle with it?" I prescribe my own treatment plan. "Hold on, not so fast, Donis," Dr. B says. He takes a pen from the pocket of his white coat and presses one end into the back of my upper arm. "Do we need to do this now?" I ask Dr. B, focusing on my hands resting on my lap. "He doesn't know?"
"Doesn't know what?"
Jamie asks, instantly alarmed. I remain fascinated by the ulnar artery threading along the back of my hand, a faint blue river barely visible beneath the skin.
"You didn't tell your boyfriend?"
Dr. B's voice is gentle, though disappointed. I want to remind Dr. B about doctor-patient confidentiality, but when I look up, his eyes are kind and filled with concern. I give a half shrug with one good shoulder and make a decision. "It's okay, he can see," I say. I keep my eyes on Jamie now, as Dr. B slowly drags the pen down my arm.
I only know what my doctor is doing because I'm familiar with the sensory test. It isn't until the pen reaches just above my elbow that I say, "There." I spell it out for Jamie. That's where I feel the pen on my skin. Everything above it is numb.